Hello and welcome to another sweet episode of Cineblokes. I'm Benjamin Baker.
I'm Caelan Burrows.
And we have just come from the cinema and we have seen Candyman.
Yeah, now look, I need to lead with this, all right? Because I don't want anyone to be disappointed the way that I was if you was thinking that this was supposed to be a biopic about one Willy Wonka.
Yeah, no, you would definitely be let down.
Yeah, there's almost zero coverage of his backstory here.
Yeah, you know, I've got to ask a question, Caelan.
Yeah.
The R rating didn't throw you off? You really thought that the life of Willy Wonka deserved a hard R for violence?
I mean, did you see Gene Wilder's performance? It gets pretty dark.
Yeah, I mean, a bit. I don't know if it's Candyman dark. But yeah, sure, I can see how you might have gone in there.
You can't argue that they didn't lull me into a false sense of security when they start playing the Candyman song over the opening credits. All right, that's just not fair.
All right, it's a fair warning to anybody that had a different idea of what this film should be. So no, that's not what it is.
Nope.
This is a... Candyman is a direct sequel... slash reboot slash remake slash continuation slash update for a new generation.
It sort of has that, like, Halloween.
Yeah.
You know, the new Halloween. It's like, remember all the sequels after the first one? Well, those don't count. This is what it is. Because there's three, I think, Candyman films.
Yeah.
Right, and this, I don't know if it acknowledges... the other two, because to be honest, I've only seen the original.
Yeah, I've only seen the original as well. And I just recently watched it, so it's very fresh in my mind. So all the connections I'm very familiar with them. Obviously, in preparation for this, I knew what film we were watching. So I didn't watch Willy Wonka. I watched the original Candyman.
I mean, look, I watched them both. I watched the first one and I watched the Tim Burton one. So it's not... didn't really put me in the right mindset. But yeah, anyway.
You must have been very confused watching this one.
Was, very much so.
Like, where's the everlasting gobstopper?
I was like, which one of these people is Johnny Depp? I don't... very confused. But yeah, this... it's the IMDb lists it as a spiritual sequel, which I don't even know what that means. Because...
I've never heard of that.
It sort of does that Halloween thing where it's like, this... is directly tied to the original film.
Mm-hmm.
And with, you know, obviously, no spoilers up top.
Yeah, right. And that shouldn't spoil it for you. That should just give you a little bit of a frame of mind when you go into it. So I think it was pretty obvious from the trailers that this is clearly connected to, you know, the overall lore. So we just don't watch for, what is it? Forbidden of the Flesh or something like that. Whatever the sequel is.
I think Farewell to the Flesh.
Farewell to the Flesh. Yeah, right. Don't watch that one for research. It's not going to help you. Watch the original Candyman.
Yeah. Or don't.
Or don't.
Yeah.
And then you might actually still be confused, even if you've watched them or you haven't.
Yeah.
I feel like you're probably going to walk away going, well, I'm still not sure.
Well, it's a tremendous origin story. I'll give it that.
Yeah, right. So look, where should we start? Should we start with writing, directing?
Yeah, sure. So we've got three writers on this one.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is, I think, the director.
Yes.
Nia DaCosta.
Yes.
Who's done, you know, other works. Not a ton, to be fair.
No, she's definitely a newcomer. She came onto the scene with a film called Little Woods, which is a film that stars Tessa Thompson, who I absolutely adore. And it's a wonderful film. It was a critically acclaimed film. It was, you know, this big debut for her. And... it caught the eye of Jordan Peele, who then brought her on to, you know, co-write it, because Jordan Peele also wrote this. You know, he brought her in to co-write it and then, you know, gave her the director's chair for it. And then she will be directing The Marvels.
The Marvels, right. Yeah, 2022.
Yeah. So stark contrast from a murdering spiritual man with a hook to Marvel.
I mean, is it though?
Yeah.
This film sort of does, again, because it's sort of an origin story of sorts, mm-hmm. you know, it's, I sort of left it feeling like I just watched a superhero movie. And I don't know how I feel about that.
When we get into spoilers, he's not wrong. I know you're sitting there listening going, oh, Caitlin's messing it up again. Just going off on a strange tangent. That is not what's happening. He's actually more correct than you would think. But we can't really get into it because it is spoilers. So when we get there, pay attention because he's not off base.
And then the third writer on this is Wynne Rosenfeld.
Yes. Who also worked with Jordan Peele.
Yes.
A number of times.
Yeah, mostly as a producer, though.
Yeah,
He wrote one episode of the Twilight Zone reboot that mm-hmm. Jordan Peele did, and then this.
Yes.
So not a lot going on there. And we I think you and I surmised that based on that track record, he probably had the least amount to do with the script.
Yes.
really hard to say, but, you know.
It does have a bit of that feeling because you do get the sense that, you know, Jordan and Nia, this is kind of their wheelhouse, right? This is something that they truly enjoy. And you can see that in kind of the direction. You can see there is a lot of Jordan Peele in here with the social commentary, which is obviously very much about the original. The original is a social commentary on gentrification and all of that. But Jordan Peele is never one to shy away from those types of things. Nope. Right? He's very good at kind of putting those social issues, racial issues, all those kinds of things into here. And you can tell that Nia DaCosta understands that. So it does feel like their writer's room was just Nia and Jordan going back and forth. And then Wynne was like, can he have a hook? just giving useless advice. And they're like, yeah, all right, man, we'll give Candyman the hook.
Maybe you should have candy. Oh, yeah. Oh, good point.
Will that make you go get us coffee while we finish this up?
We'll put that one in the win column, Wynne.
I feel bad. I'm sorry, Mr. Rosenfeld. I don't know if you... You might be a very accomplished writer and we just don't know it yet.
These are all very speculatory insults at this point. Which is not... I mean, look. I feel like, you know, we've sort of delved off into this weird tangent. But so Nia DaCosta directing.
Yes.
I feel like the film is directed very well.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure Jordan Peele is also a producer on this. So it does have that very, what's his company? Monkey Paw?
Monkey Paw.
It does have that very Monkey Paw feel to it.
It does. Yeah. Right.
You know, it's very stylized and it is directed very well.
Yes.
I feel like the writing is not bad,
right?
But it does hold the film back a bit for me.
Yeah, and I would agree a bit. It almost feels as though, and we were talking about this as we were walking out of the cinema, but it almost feels as if it's too complicated for its own good. You know, in the way that we've described it of being, you know, this direct sequel, this kind of reboot of sorts, or the spiritual sequel as it's listed. There's a lot of things that happen here that feel very organic and it feels very good. And you can tell that, you know, Jordan and Nia truly enjoy the story and they like what's going on with Candyman and they want to expand on it. And you can tell that Nia DaCosta has a great eye for visuals. She's very good at putting it all together in that way. But you can tell that they let a lot of those ideas get away from them, where they wanted to just do a bit too much, and there's a little bit of fat trimming that could have happened here to make it a bit more focused.
Because as a standalone film, it almost works completely.
Right.
With a few moments that where they're trying to tie it to the original that don't make a lot of sense.
Yes.
But then as a sequel, almost stands, but then there's a few moments where they're trying to make it its standalone thing and it don't make any sense. So sort of living in two worlds, almost like a mirror reflection. Huh?
Look, if that was intentional, then I'm giving it a 5 out of 5.
Very
it's highest rating I could possibly give it if that was the case.
Very, very strong use of mirrors in this. Down to one of the things that drove me crazy is the opening film, all the studio credits are all backwards.
Yeah, they're all like mirror reflections. Yeah.
And you know, I guess if you're familiar with Candyman, you know, oh yeah, mirrors, that's a big thing. But if you're
it's
not
part of the law.
Yeah, if you're not and you're just going in to see the latest Jordan Peele produced horror film, you're going to be like, Hey, someone tell the projector the film's backwards.
You're going to miss that. It's all correct. Out there yelling at the poor cashier to flip it.
Because I was expecting sort of like a, you know, you start in the reverse and then they do some sort of weird tricks and you see the mirror reflection. And they don't, they literally do not do that.
Right.
Until the movie starts and everything's jarring. Normal.
And you're absolutely right. It does feel like they're trying to do two films and almost blend them together, but not everything works the way that I think they wanted it to.
Yeah. And I think we can both agree that the third act is really the weakest part of the film. It sort of falls flat near the end.
Yeah, it really does. And I think a lot of that is, again, contributed to the writing. I think, you know, the writing is trying to tie these two different films that we've mentioned. It's trying to tie them all together in this nice little bow. And it all is just, it's very abrupt. And even in just, and obviously we don't talk about this too much, but even in the editing, you know, we were talking about it where the whole third act is just edited in a very bizarre kind of way where you're never really sure what's being done or how it's all unfolding or how it's all supposed to end. And sometimes that's a good thing. I mean, if you're trying to create mystery, but that's not what's happening here. It creates downright confusion. It's not mysterious where you're trying to unravel what's happening.
Yeah, not the good kind of confusion. Like the original, there is a lot of confusion because you're like, is Candyman real? Is she doing it? You're not really clear on that fact.
Right.
And this isn't like, I mean, I think for the most part in this film, it's pretty clear what's going on.
Yeah.
There's very little guesswork in the psychological realm of things.
Right.
But yeah, there's points at the end where you're just like, wait, what is happening? You know, and not in a good way.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But yeah, it's directed very well.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, for all the things that I have issues with, just directing-wise and visual-wise, I'm very excited to see what else Nia DaCosta can do. Because she clearly has an understanding of how camera work is supposed to be done. There's some brilliant shots. And one of the things that I think she does very well is she does a lot of implied violence, which is something that I've always really enjoyed about good horror films that just build the tension and let your own imagination kind of recreate the grisly things that happen. You know what I mean? There's a lot of that, you know, you see things cut away, and then there's fun little camera tricks that they do as people, you know, there's one particular scene that I very much like where, you know, it looks like everything's going to be okay, and then something happens, but it's doing this big, giant, wide shot as it's going down. So you're not even in the room when things are happening. You're literally watching it from a distance. And so you don't really get to see what's going on, but you get it and you can kind of conjure it up in your own mind. And I like that a lot. And she does that all throughout this film, and it's done very, very well.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And of course, you know, I feel like she had some talented actors to work with here.
Yeah.
In fact, if the one thing this film does very well, and I'm going to credit the writing and the acting as well, but they make a very likable cast.
Yes.
To where that's one of the things that, for me, as we progress through the film up until we reach the third act, there's characters that you're like, oh, please don't kill them. You know what I mean? Like,
No, you're absolutely right.
And so I attribute that to, you know, clever writing and, you know, the actors delivering that dialogue very well. So it stars Yaya?
Mm-hmm. I know how to say it, but I just want to hear you struggle.
Well, I feel like I must have struggled on this before because he was in Aquaman.
Yeah, he was in Aquaman,
But Yaya Abdul-Mateen II.
It's perfect.
Which means someone out there is named Yaya Abdul-Mateen I.
The first, that's right. It's a very weird thing because I'm like, mate, you're in Hollywood. You can make up your name. You can.
I mean, it very much sounds like he did, though.
It does. It does. But it also sounds like a weird road stop off of Highway 5 or something. Or it's like a challenge of like, all right, we're passing Yaya Abdul-Mateen II Street. Who can say it 5 times fast?
I mean, it's either that or he's a pope. You know what I mean? Like, I can see that. Pope Yaya Abdul-Mateen II.
I feel, look, Yaya, I'm so sorry. I don't mean to knock your name, mate. I'm sure it's a fine name, and I'm sure it's got meaning, and it means a lot to you.
And if you're ever the Pope, we apologize.
We do apologize. I'm not even that religious, but I apologize. He's fantastic in this. I regret having the first thing I've ever seen him in be Aquaman.
Yeah, I was just thinking that does not do justice to this man's acting ability.
Yeah, it absolutely does not. He is cut short tremendously by just not a good film. I'm sorry, I'm not a fan of Wet Thor. he's definitely the victim of you know, not being able to really do what he can do. And I remember when I watched the Watchmen series, I was very impressed with him. I was like, oh my God, he can act, and he can act very, very well. And he continues that here. His journey throughout this film, you definitely feel for him. You care for him. Again, up until the third act when it all comes to a head, you really want to see where this journey is going to take him. You're very invested in what's going on as a protagonist for him. So, yeah. He's very good.
And we actually spend the most time with him.
Yes.
And then, you know what's weird about this film is that, you know, going back to just the writing and stuff, I have to ask if there was maybe some studio interference somewhere about, because the runtime on this is only an hour and a half.
Mm.
And that feels, you know, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I've an issue with that, but most films nowadays are pushing the 2-hour mark.
Right.
And this one actually felt like it could have benefited from an extra 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah, and I agree, and I don't say that often. I very much rally against the new 2-hour mark, because most films can do with that 30 minutes being cut completely. But no, you're absolutely right. I do feel like, and again, a lot of this is attributed to the third act, where that third act could have benefited from another 15 minutes. There's many other things I would change, but all of that is spoilers.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. It feels abrupt when it ends. It ends and you kind of just sit there like, is there more? Was that it?
Yeah, it was like, you know, I'm trying to think of other films where, like, all I can think of is the second Matrix, right?
Oh,
Where it ends and you're like, well, they wouldn't end the film like that.
oh, you did? Oh.
Yeah. But, I mean, at least that, you sort of knew there was a third one coming out.
Right, because they made them at the same time. Yeah. Right.
Whereas this isn't like that, and it is sort of that. I mean, it's not the same thing, but I had that sort of same feeling. It was just like, wait, that's the end?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's strange. It's very bizarre.
But anyway, I was getting off point. What I was trying to say was that it just, like, we didn't get to spend a lot of time with other characters because I felt like the runtime was so short on this one. But the other lead is Tayona Paris.
Yep.
And she is, I mean, there is no one in this film that is bad.
Yeah, right.
everyone delivers a solid performance. Yeah. And I feel like she actually maybe gets to do a bit more acting than Yaya.
She does. Because
she's got...
She gets to act differently.
Yeah, I mean, she's got more of the, like, you know, scared stuff going on. You know, she deals with more of the fear end of things than he does, I think. And then she's also got more emotional stuff going on because there's this whole backstory with a character involving, you know, her dad and stuff like that.
Right.
I feel like she, there's a lot of painting in this film, and I feel like she has a bigger canvas to work with.
It is very tied to art.
Yes.
So if you're into art, good luck. You'll enjoy it, I guess. I'm sorry, I had to look it up real quick because I knew she looked familiar and I could not put my finger on where in the world I knew her from. She plays Monica Rambeau in WandaVision.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Monica Rambeau? Yeah, Geraldine. Yes.
Which means it actually makes a lot more sense when you consider that she's going to be in the
Marvels.
The Marvels.
It's all connected. Candyman is now a part of the MCU. It's a part of the multiverse.
there's a few other, you know, sort of ensemble cast members that they don't get a lot of screen time. they do great. They make the most of the time that they have to where you like those characters and stuff like that.
Even characters I don't like how they were written and the things that they do, I still think they gave a fine performance. I wasn't, you know, I don't fault anything that they did as far as acting wise. So overall acting is absolutely solid throughout the film.
But I think the question that's on everyone's mind, Benjamin, is that in the film Candyman, how sweet were the scares?
I hate you so much.
Thank you. I'm here all night.
And I hate myself for laughing that hard at such a stupid joke. I'm losing it in my old age.
Either that or I'm getting funnier. I don't know.
No, it's definitely old age. So how sweet are the scares? You know, this film, much like the original,
not very scary.
It's not very scary. And that's not to say that the film isn't tense or without its eerie creepiness, because that is, again, going back to the directing, something that Nia DaCosta does very, very well.
Yeah.
The film is for most of it, is very intense as far as just, it's chilling, it's creepy, it's very, you know, the whole time you're just like, oh, any one of these people could die brutally, and I don't know how. And she does a lot of camera tricks with, like, mirrors.
Yeah, that was
that's done very well.
One thing that was very different from the original, and again, because the original was so, is there a Candyman or is it just her? Whereas this one sort of, you know, it's very clear on what it's trying to say. And so the way that they handle some of the kills is done in a very particular way.
Yeah.
And in a couple of places, it's very effective.
Yes.
Especially the sort of the first time that someone's killed.
Oh, yeah.
It's
pretty great.
It's probably the best scene of the whole film.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. And it's got that horror humor because they're definitely people that you're fine with being disposed of.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, you always got to get the first kill out of the way, and it's always got to be people where you're like, yeah, no, you could die brutally. It's okay.
I mean, I would say that about, for the most part, every character that's done off, with two or three exceptions. But even then, they sort of made those characters jerks as well. But
yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, every person that gets killed is dislikable in some way.
Yeah, right. Not that you're rooting for them to die brutally, but
no,
you're kind of fine with it.
But that's, I do have issue with that, because that was one of the things about the original, is there were people that you liked that get killed.
Yeah, right.
And you're like, no, there was a perfectly likable person. Why would you do that?
Yeah,
whereas this, again, it's sort of trying to be its own thing while still, you know, being a spiritual successor or whatever, a spiritual sequel. I don't know. It's not scary.
It's not scary. I mean, it is tense. And I think there's something to the idea of urban legend and lore. And look, I'm going to tell you that the film didn't scare me, but I'm not rushing home to say Candyman five times in my mirror before I go to bed. So for that much, it's very effective.
I mean, look, if it's going to make Tony Todd show up in my bathroom, at least get his autograph, you know? Before
he... Sign here, and then he just carves his name in your chest.
Before he does one here. Yeah. You imagine me at hospital. I'm like, well, what happened to you? I signed my chest with his hook.
Don't burn my body. I want it preserved forever.
I don't want a plastic surgeon. I want these scars forever.
I'll tell everyone, I swear.
Look, it's a win for me either way. Whether it's Tony Todd Candyman or Virginia Madsen Candyman that shows up, I'll be fine either way.
That's true. That's fair. That's totally fair. Whichever vengeful spirit comes for you. So I'm going to go ahead and let you do that. I am going to sleep peacefully without the threat of mythical death.
Are you sure, though? I mean, I feel like we're pretty close. So maybe you're going to have, you know, nightmares about your dad.
I mean, that could be true. But luckily, they'll have no payoff for what's happening.
That's true. And I suppose we're not living together, so maybe we won't have that.
Who knows? Look, the point is, I'm not saying it. And even when I actually go to do my own video review later, I refuse to say, I'm just going to call it the film. I'm not even going to say it in the review. When I go to write it, I'm not going to write it five times. I refuse. I'm not superstitious. I am sumstitious.
Yeah, well, in fact, the laws of how Candyman is summoned are a bit muddled in this film as
yeah,
well.
They are.
So, if you're listening to this in a room with reflective surfaces, if we have said it five times, full disclosure, you may be dead already.
We're very sorry. I've purposely made sure that I can't see my reflection anywhere.
And if we haven't said it, but we're close, if you say it one or two more times to finish off the sequence, you may be dead already. I'm
yeah,
just saying.
Right. It's true. Or not.
Yeah.
Or not. Maybe you say it three times and then you're like, nope, I'm out. And then you leave and you're fine. So yeah. Who knows? It's all up in the air.
All that to say, not very scary. But yeah. I will say this, it's also not particularly gory. There are scenes of gore, don't get me wrong.
Right.
And the ones that are there are pretty graphic. But it's like twice.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, it is a lot of implied violence. There's a lot of camera tricks and, you know, clever shots. And I think because they're trying to tell the story before they're trying to splash the screen with blood, I think that's probably a smart thing to do, because I don't know that I've ever thought of Candyman as being this, you know, gory, over-the-top horror type film. Because even in the original, it's very much like you said, it's more about, is it real or is it not? Is it Helen losing her mind and committing all these crimes, or is Candyman real? And they do a lot of that kind of stuff where you don't see a lot of the brutal murders take place. You see a lot of people in blood afterwards, but you know, and all of that is leading to that idea of, you know, that psychological idea. So I think they take a lot of that and implement it here. Because, yeah, you're right. There's only maybe two scenes that are pretty gory.
Yeah. 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 And over that, it's all implied, as you said. Yeah. So
blood is spilt, though.
Yeah.
So don't, they didn't waste any money on blood, because there's a lot of it.
Yeah. If that's how you get your kicks, and you want to see people just ripped open by a hook, you're going to get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, should we rate it?
Yeah, I'm so conflicted with this film. I just don't know what to do with it, honestly.
Yeah, you know, I feel like it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's, again, I do have issues with not even a lot of the writing, because I feel like most of the, you know, you got characters that I like. So you've done something right.
Yeah.
I just feel like there's one element that I can't talk about, and you and I are on the same page on this.
Yes,
we are. We're going to talk about it in spoilers. There's just one thing. If you just took this one thing out of the film and maybe did a little twisty twist at the end, and I don't mean like a little twist, but, you know, just you tweaked things just a bit at the end.
Yeah, right.
I feel like you might have, you know, another great Jordan Peele horror film, horror film.
Yeah, I agree.
But you don't have that, so you've got a few things holding it back. So I'm going to give it, as it stands right now, 3.25. I think I'm going to go 3.25 out of 5 razor blade candies.
Okay, yeah, that's good. I think I'm gonna go a bit higher, but not much, because I think you and I are pretty much on the same page as far as the things we liked and the things that we didn't, which is actually pretty rare. I think we're right on the money where we're both like, yeah, no, I like this and I didn't like this. And you're absolutely right. There's minor tweaks, just minor things that could have been taken out or adjusted just a little bit for inflation. You could have had a close to perfect horror film. It could have been a wonderful reimagining and spiritual sequel. But they didn't do that. And there are definitely some things some problems I have. So I'm going to go 3.5. Stop picking at your scab, mate.
Oh, yeah. Did we mention there's body aura in this? Because some of that as well.
Yeah. If you like rotting flesh.
Yeah. In fact, there's a thing out there on the internet about a fear of holes, right? And it's not really a fear of holes. It's a fear of porous surfaces. Like, if you look at a honeycomb and you're like, no, thank you, you're not going to be pleased with some of the things in this film.
This is not for you.
So, just full disclosure.
Yeah. honestly, that was probably the grossest part to ever happen in the film. Yeah. I could deal with body parts being, you know, ripped apart by a hook, but... You know, watching the hand just decompose with every scene and then watching him pick at it. I was like, would you stop it, mate? Leave it alone. Let it heal.
Yeah. Someone watched The Fly, right? Yeah.
You're a big fan of Heroes season 2, right?
Is it time?
I think so.
Spoil the song.
All right.
Getting spoiled right now.
Yeah, we're going to spoil Candyman.
That's right. We're going to buy him expensive baubles and take him out places, the fancy restaurants.
I think all he wants you to do is say his name. I don't think you have to do all that.
Look, sorry. I just don't know if anyone realizes how much I want Tony Todd to pay me a visit, you know? I appreciate him so much.
I love everything you've done. You'll always be my candy man.
I loved him in The Crow, and he's barely in it, you know?
That's true. He does. Tony Todd does have that gravitas. I mean, even just because he put bees in his mouth.
Yeah, his bit parts in the Final Destination franchise. You know, he's a horror staple.
No, he is. He absolutely is. So anyways, we're going to spoil Candyman.
Yeah.
And who knows, we might summon Tony Todd, if that's how that works. So if you don't want to spoil, you know, bugger off. We're going to get into it and really break it down.
Yeah. Or alternatively, you could listen to this, have the film spoiled, and then go say Candyman in a mirror 5 times and solve all your problems.
Yeah. And then you'll die, but we've given you the film, so...
There you go.
There you are.
So do you want to start us off on, since, I mean, we're basically on the exact same wavelength on this one.
So, like we talked about, this idea of trying to connect it to the original, but then also kind of tell a new story doesn't blend as well as they want it to, because there's a number of things, but really the biggest issue that is prevalent is this new Candyman. That's introduced, and you've seen it in the trailers, and as it functions in this film, it just makes things more complicated for the worst of ways the longer it goes on.
It
starts making less and less and less sense, to the point where once we get to that third act and it's revealed that he wasn't even necessary to begin with, you're just like, what did you just waste all of this time for? It's so strange.
Yeah, it sort of like sets up its own rules and then breaks all those rules.
Yeah.
In the mythology that it's working with. And just the broad strokes. In the original film, there's a baby that's essential to the plot. It gets kidnapped by Candyman, and Virginia Madsen's character ends up sort of rescuing the baby, but then dying. And then at the end of the film, becomes Candyman?
She basically becomes the urban legend.
Yeah.
Like she's been... are now telling her story.
Yeah.
And she pretty much becomes the vengeful
spirit. Yeah, because she don't literally become Candyman. Like, right. You don't say Candyman and it summons her. You said, because it was her Rex or whatever that
said
her
name. Yeah, and it says
Helen. Yeah, it says her name 5 times and then gets his comeuppance.
Yeah.
That was one of those where you're like, yeah, get it.
That's a great ending, by the way. Yeah,
you get it, Alan, you know? Yeah.
Take that, Travis.
But this film, it focuses on the baby from that film. He's come back. He don't know he's that baby. But it's honestly a great way to tie the film to the original.
Yes. All of that, by the way, everything surrounding his connection to Cabrini Green, him being the baby, him, because essentially what happens in the broad strokes and in the bare bones of the things that work is he, you know, he discovers this story that gets told to him. And the thing I really liked in this is the story is being told as if Helen is the monster, yes. Right? And you could tell that over the years, the story's gotten skewed and Candyman has basically been pushed aside.
He's been forgotten.
He's been forgotten, essentially. And, you know, Helen is the new monster, right? And, you know, obviously we know that that's not the actual story. We know that that's not what happens. And so Anthony basically inadvertently summons Candyman. He doesn't realize that he's done it. And he immediately obviously feels connected to the story. And so he goes back to Cabrini Green. And now it's the child coming back, the victim that was lost. And it kind of sets in motion this whole chain of events that, you know, make him kind of experience a lot of the same things that Helen did. You know, everything.
I mean, he actually starts physically transforming.
Yes.
Into, you know, we talked about the body aura. It's, you know, he gets stung by a bee on his right hand, and then the flesh starts to rot and decay, and eventually it spreads to like half of his body, and it kind of gets that honeycomb look to it. It's very disgusting.
Yeah, right. And it's very gradual. It just kind of, every time you see him, it just gets worse and worse, and he does, and he picks at it, and it's so gross. It's so gross. It's honestly the most grossed out I was. I watched people get split in half. I watched an Achilles heel get ripped by a hook at the very beginning of the film, and him just picking off his fingernail that's been rotted. I was like, oh, good God, I'm eating popcorn, mate. Stop it.
Yeah. But... So that all works very well. In fact, if that's just what we experience, that he stumbles across the original myth of Candyman and reawakens that and starts transforming into it, and then we learn later that he is that child, and then he becomes Candyman, I think perfect.
Yeah.
You've done what you set out to do.
Right. You did the sequel. And you reinvented it, and that's as close as you're going to get to a spiritual sequel of the original. And
But then...
then they got to throw a wrench in the whole thing.
Yeah, so then there's this backstory about a new Candyman. I'm trying to remember what... Was that from like the 60s, the 70s?
It was 70s, yeah. So the film opens with this backstory.
Which also don't make sense because the original film took place
in
like 90s.
The 90s. In the early 90s. So oh, no. And the original Candyman was killed in 1890.
Yeah,
so what is this? When they did that, I was like, oh, you must have forgotten when the original Candyman was. Yeah. I thought they just skipped it over and just reinvented when it took place.
One of my problems with this film is that the way that it handles the source material and the way that it tells that backstory, it does it in a way that if you've seen the original film, you're very confused, because it does. It opens with that someone telling the story of the original film, but they're telling it as though Helen was Candyman, that there was, they don't even mention Candyman. They just mention,
it's just Helen.
This woman who went crazy, killed a bunch of people, kidnapped a baby and tried to burn it to death. Right.
Right.
That's the story. But then, the main character sort of learns more about what's going on, and he meets this bloke in some rundown projects or whatever.
I think it's supposed to be Cabrini Green.
Which is weird, because that's not what Cabrini Green looked like in the
original
film.
Yeah, but I think it's supposed to be that. Yeah, I think that Cabrini Green is supposed to have been... I think that it's supposed to tie in with the gentrification around it. So they've been moving... They've been changing it, but it is still the project.
Yeah, it's some abandoned... one-story houses and whatever. But he meets this chap, and this chap starts telling him, he's like, well, for me, Candyman is this guy. And this is where things get weird for me. Because
weird even for Candyman, by the way.
Yeah, because like, if you're familiar with the original, as soon as they get into this, you're going to be like, that's not right at all.
So, I don't know who that bloke is, but...
And then to try to connect it to the original makes it even weirder, because... So according to this character, there was a man known as the Candyman, and they called him that because he gave candies to children, right? fine. You know, I'm actually more okay with that because the original Candyman, why'd they call him Candyman? Because they smeared him in honey and bees stung him to death? What does candy have to do with that? It makes no sense.
Right.
But, so I actually found that to be okay. I was like, all right, fair point. That's why they call him Candyman. But this man is alive. He doesn't kill children, but he has a hook for a hand. And he also wears a jacket very similar to Candyman from the 1890s.
Yes.
And then he gets some candies discovered with razor blades. He's blamed. The police show up and they beat him to death.
Like you do in the 70s.
and now he becomes Candyman. But that's not where it stops. It's not... the problem I have is that you took the source material and then you sort of reinvented it, but then you didn't reinvent it. And then you've got this weird muddled, oh, Candyman is forever and it comes back in different incarnations. But where I have issue, I don't have a problem with that necessarily, you know, that's fine. But like, why did the live human man that became Candyman, why did he already look like Candyman?
Yes.
Whereas, you know, in this movie, the main character does not look like Candyman, and he starts going through the body aura that transforms him into Candyman. And it's like, so why did the other chap just look like Candyman already?
Yeah, it's such a weird insertion, and especially the way that they try to explain it away and they try to put it all together. It just doesn't add up. None of it adds up, and it overcomplicates everything. Especially because this new Candyman that, you know, this character was told and talked about is the Candyman that's going around and killing people. So you're just like, okay, but what is happening?
Yeah.
And the longer it goes, it's not so jarring when it first starts, right? When it first starts, you're kind of like, oh, okay, I can, you know, maybe get invested in this and see where it's going. And then by the time we get to that third act and it all tries to come together, you're just like, no, none of this makes sense. None of this is okay.
Yeah, and like if you were just, like you said, if it would just been that new Candyman the whole way through, fine. But at the very end, when the main character goes full Candyman.
Yes. Which you should never do, by the way. You should never go full Candyman. A lot of bees. It's hard work.
They show us a full CG Tony Todd face.
Yes.
And it's Tony Todd's voice telling, you know, the other main character to go tell everyone about him. And you're like, what? So we don't need the other Candyman.
Yeah.
And why wasn't it just Tony Todd the whole time?
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yes, I agree. And the thing is like, there are other ways to incorporate different iterations of Candyman. So if you want to do something like that, where you're like, oh yeah, he's the original, but people have attributed all of these other individuals throughout history, because that's kind of the whole thing, right? The whole idea, and this is, I'm going to call him the expository character because he literally only exists to be a plot dump. That's it. That's all he does. He just exposition galore. So he's explaining to Anthony as Anthony's transition, he's explaining to him that all of these people are real and Candyman is this embodiment of, you know, their pain and so
pain and suffering.
And suffering. Okay, fine. You got your spiritual out and that's all well and fine. But if you're going to do that, then the Candyman that is existing either needs to be nondescript and just be the vengeful ghost. Like, we never see the face. So then, if you want it to be, okay, this child has been chosen to take on the mantle of the next person, of the next iteration of Candyman, it doesn't matter if Tony Todd shows up next, because we've already established that it's all of this. You basically delete this whole idea that the Candyman that this guy remembers is the one that's committing all of the murders. Because then you can have your cake and eat it too. You can do it all.
And honestly, I feel like if that's the way they wanted to go, they should have just not connected it to the original.
Yeah, because at that point, just do a spiritual reboot.
Yeah, because honestly, I was fine with the reinvention of the Candyman when they was like, this guy gave candy out. That's why they called him Candyman and all that. I was completely fine with that until you was like, yeah, no, he's an iteration. And I was like, okay, but that makes no sense because Tony Todd was in the original And that was set in the 90s. So why wasn't she seeing this Candyman?
Yeah.
And then at the end of the film, we see Tony Todd Candyman. What? So
too many Candymans in one film.
We're not even seeing Anthony Candyman. Yeah, right. We're just seeing Tony Todd.
Yeah. What? Yeah, it's strange. It's strange.
I mean, I guess we see Anthony Candyman for like a minute.
Yeah, but it's also like...
And then he gets all covered in bees like he's Nicolas Cage.
He's covered in bees. Yeah, but it's also like, okay, if he's supposed to be the new Candyman, like you said, why do you have Tony Todd show back up? Look, I love me some Tony Todd. I'm all down for him to be there. But you already established that the new Candyman is Anthony. That's what he was chosen for. He was chosen to be the new Candyman. So... if he has gone full Candyman, it should be him that is telling her to tell everyone.
Yeah, if anything, I feel like because, getting back to the third act where they just really drop the ball on this.
Yeah, it falls apart big time.
So many things that just don't get any payoff, you know? Yeah. I mean, we see Anthony struggling the whole film with this transition into this character, but then suddenly it's just like overdrive and he's Candyman. No more struggle. What would have been nice, and if you wanted to include Tony Todd, would be a scene, and I don't know how you do it with this weird culty expository character that serves just dumb purposes.
It's so, so weird.
But if you remove that character, and you have a scene where, you know, maybe he's all, you know, halfway deformed and everything like that, where he's looking in a mirror, right? You know, maybe he's working on one of his dark paintings or something like that. But then you're looking into a mirror and you can have sort of flashes of the previous Candymen. Can we call them Candymen?
Yes.
And then you can have Tony Todd show up in the mirror and be like, tell everyone. And then you cut to the other Candyman and he can say something or whatever.
Yeah,
almost like a passing of the torch.
Right, yeah. And it could very much, because there's a number of times where Anthony sees... him turning himself, like he's turning into it. And so every time you do that, it could be a new iteration of Candyman. You could do the one that we've talked about. You can do one we haven't heard of. You can do Tony Todd. And they could be these quick little flashes or, you know, reflections. And so you get the sense that, like, oh, he is becoming the essence of Candyman.
Yeah.
Which is what they try to do, but they don't land it. And especially in the third, this expository character, the left field that he takes, just the motivations are so outlandish, and they're edited in such a bizarre way.
Yeah.
They do flashback stuff here really poorly, to be honest. I'm sorry, Nia. I like a lot of what you've done, but your flashback stuff is...
jarring.
It's jarring. There was one... So, Theona's character, the girlfriend, she apparently had a father who used to paint, and then he died tragically, and then she's got all of his stuff in a storage bin somewhere, and she's not quite ready to get rid of it, but she doesn't want it either. Okay, but you do not realize how hard it was for me to put all of that together. That sounds very simple, and we literally had to have a 10-minute conversation about how all of those elements actually go together, because it is not presented that way at all. I'll give you the cliff notes to help you.
Yeah, and I mean, I picked up what they was doing, but also at the same time, there's no payoff.
Yeah, it doesn't pay off at all.
There has literally got to be 10 to 15 minutes missing from this film, because not only do we have, after she sees the murdered people...
Yeah.
Then she has the nightmares where it flashes between her finding the bodies and then her seeing a dad commit suicide.
Right.
Right. Which again, and I'll give it to you, it's the way it's edited. You're like, what? You know.
It took me a very long time to understand what that scene was.
Yeah. But I mean, I understood it. But it was just, it is. It's just, when you watched it, you're just like, sort of like, okay. But then we don't. Nothing comes of that. And then later on, she's got a scene. There's two more scenes that sort of address this, and it all goes nowhere. You've got the scene with her brother.
Right.
Where it's like, hey, mum wants to close down the shed and get rid of dad's stuff. So, you know, you want it? You want to take it? You want to sell it? And she's like, no, I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all we get.
She's like, okay.
And then we get the scene where she's with this art person.
Oh, yeah.
The lady
right.
at the museum.
Right. And she brings up her dad.
Yeah. And the lady brings up her dad and brings up some other stuff. And you almost get this feeling like we're supposed to feel like the character is not being sought on her own merits.
Right.
It's like everybody wants, you know, oh, your dad was famous and your boyfriend is... You know, he's got right. this art that's connected to these murders all of a sudden. And so I think we're supposed to get the feeling like that's like is setting in because, you know, it just focuses on her and she's sort of staring off into nothing.
Yeah.
But then the scene goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And then we literally never address it again. Nope.
It doesn't have any play. It's not connected to anything. It's just this weird character arc that goes nowhere. Yeah. And again, the way it's edited is so confusing. Yeah. I know it doesn't sound like that's complicated, but it is extremely complicated visually here.
Yeah.
It's weird. And then, so this expository character goes from that, right? It goes from just being a plot device, essentially, to explain the story to Anthony, to like some weird cult kid that like lived in the projects and saw Candyman be murdered, and then he saw that Candyman murder his brother?
Sister?
Oh, sister? Somebody.
I don't know. It was
somebody
yeah,
in his house.
It was shot in a way where you're like, there's someone, or maybe two someones in a bathroom, but I don't know who
they
are.
Doing the Candyman, but then it's like, where that is placed, where that scene is placed, is like, right smack in the middle of like, everything going down, to the point where like, it takes you more time than it should to understand who this kid is supposed to be, yeah. even though you've already seen him.
Yeah, because we haven't... They started the movie with this kid.
Right.
And then you see another brief flashback, maybe a third of the way into the film. And then we get just the... And so to go on what Benjamin is saying is we see the girlfriend... She's looking for Anthony. She goes to this laundromat. She goes in the back. The door locks behind her. She's looking out, crying for help. Someone comes up, pulls her away into darkness, and then we hard cut to this kid in this sort of weird hallway, and it's not very clear. It's sort of dark, and you're like, wait, what is happening?
Yeah.
And by the time you figure out who we're looking at again,
yeah.
And then the Candyman murders happens. He opens the door, he looks in, he sees Candyman, and then we cut to the laundromat guy, but like a close-up on him, and he's like, yeah, now the sacrifice can happen. And then we hard cut again to the girlfriend waking up in the church handcuffed, and you're like, what in all the world did I just see?
It is so much, and it's, yeah, and then that whole scene is just so weird. It's like you said, Anthony is now full... Almost, the transaction is almost complete. He's like kneeling in front of the mural, and he's not all there. And now this expository character is like obsessed with bringing Candyman back, and he wants to like create his own story. And you're just like, but why? What in the world is your motivation for this? And his whole argument is, oh, we need Candyman to protect us. And it's like, didn't you just show your siblings be murdered in a bathroom? Like, what do you need Candyman for? What are you talking about, mate? And Candyman is already back. So what? And then he knows who Anthony is, and he knows that he's the boy that was taken, and that's yeah. never explained how.
Yeah, right. Where he's just like, I knew the baby would return. How do you know about the baby?
Yeah, did you follow him the whole time? What are you doing?
And how do you recognize this grown man as that baby? And look, I'm all for if they wanted to incorporate this character into this story, what would have been good is if, you know, using the same background, he saw Candyman kill his siblings as a child. And actually saw, like, face-to-face, saw Candyman, and it just made him crazy.
Sure.
Right?
He snapped.
And so, cut to present day, you've got your main character, here's the story, starts delving into it, and then, you know, goes about. But let's say a murder starts happening, right? And maybe they film it in a way where, because in this, it's very clear that supernatural things are going
yes.
on. There's no questioning whether, you know, yeah. Anthony's doing it or not. You know he's not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. There's no sanity check here.
Yes. Yeah.
He might be going crazy, but he is not the one committing the murders. There's yeah. no mystery there whatsoever.
But they could have shot it in a way that left that up in the air. And then later, you know, you still have Anthony meet this chap who gives him exposition. But what if we found out that this chap was committing the murders to help drive the myth of Candyman and bring it back?
Right.
And, you know, maybe he knows, maybe Candyman is using him as a vessel of sorts, or maybe that's why right. he has extra information.
Right.
Which honestly may be the case here, but we don't get that. We never
yeah.
get that.
Yeah, it's all very, it just doesn't make sense. His turn is so bizarre. And again, when we talk about pacing, it's not just bizarre, but it's bizarre and then it's over. Like, he goes full crazy Candyman cult guy to, I'm going to chase you, to, all right, I'm dead.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I guess if that's what you want to do. It's
yeah, it's really weird. It's like, because he's sort of the menace. He really is the menace at the end of the film, but he's not even that much of a menace.
Right.
Like, she goes ballistic on this man.
Yes. It's of all the murders, she might commit the most brutal one.
Yeah.
she gives John Wick a run for his money.
Yeah.
She definitely kills him with a pen.
But, like, the whole premise of the third act is that this man... Now he has Anthony and he's all looking all, you know, Candyman'd up, and he cuts Anthony's hand off and he puts a hook in there and he calls the police and he's like, hey, I found the person who's killing everyone, so that the police will come and shoot him down, thus prolonging the myth of Candyman, getting him back out there, which seems silly at this point. Because the news coverage of all these murders...
Yeah, because he's already out there.
Yeah. And you could be like, well... You know, they're not saying Candyman. They're saying the, what's it, Say My Name? Is that the name?
Yeah, yeah.
They're calling it the Say My Name killer. But there was four girls just murdered in a high school that I'm pretty sure their fifth friend who made it out of the bathroom could be like, yeah, we was all saying the name Candyman.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And look, and especially if you're a Candyman enthusiast.
Yeah.
You're probably pretty... well-versed in murders that are committed by Candyman.
Yeah, and you're telling me that's not going to spread like wildfire whether or not this person gets shot to death looking like Candyman. But that's... Whatever. So that's that's the whole setup. But she stabs this guy to death, and then Anthony shows up sort of like himself, but then he passes out or almost dies.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. The police show up, and... And I mean, look, then they're not wrong in light of all the things that have come out about police.
But it is heavy-handed, my God!
Like, get your hands up, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Like, but you didn't give him time.
Yeah. No room for subtleties here.
Plus, everyone was on the ground.
Yeah, it's. I understand it. I get it, and the problem is. This is not a film necessarily about police brutality. Now, it could be, and I think that felt a bit like what they were trying to do with this new Candyman. I don't know that that came across as well as they wanted it to, because while you can make the connection of, the cops here shoot first, ask questions later, we get that, but this film is much more about the gentrification and inequality of... what creates things like Cabrini Green. Like, that's really... And that's what the original was, too. And they really drive that home. And so now to do this very assaulting message of, oh, yeah, the police just out there killing black people. And it's like, okay, yes, but this is also a very complicated situation that we should probably unpack a bit more than just being like, yep, all police are bad. Let's just go ahead and kill them.
Yeah, because I feel like where the film handles the material... the best is with the art critic.
Yes.
you know, and
yes.
her sort of ignorance to everything.
Right.
Like, I feel
right.
like
and there's that pretentiousness and yeah. just, yeah, right, yeah.
And I feel like they really handle it very well there. But
yeah.
then you get to this thing with the police at the end. And of course, again, every character that is killed in this film is presented as a, well, they had it coming. You know, like yeah, that's sort right. of, you've got, I mean, with maybe the exception of the girl in the art gallery, like, she was just sort of angsty, but, you know.
But I wasn't too broken up about her death.
Yeah, I mean, oh yeah, you're right. But
I don't know if she deserved to die, but I wasn't like, oh, it's so sad.
Yeah, I mean, even the teen girls, it was really, like, yeah, they show them, like, harassing the
yeah,
one girl.
Right, they're bullies, so you're like, yeah, okay.
But it didn't even seem like they was harassing her in, like, they don't show her, like, pushing her about or anything. There
yeah.
was just sort of, like, you could have been playful teasing, is how it was construed.
Yeah.
But I felt like they did that intentionally. It's like this black girl comes in, goes into this door.
Right,
and
right.
They
so
start,
all these white girls are going to die.
They start pounding on the door and saying things, and then they all get killed. And one of them, in the most comically, like, they don't show it, but they show the other girls looking under, and just this pool of blood.
It just, like, pours out from underneath the
yeah,
stall.
Yeah, just like a waterfall of blood. And I was like, what is happening? But anyway, so everyone that gets killed is presented in some sort of poor light so that it makes it
yeah
less offensive, I guess. And these cops are yeah. so over the top.
Oh, yeah. It's not even like... And again, and that's the thing with, like, this art critic. Yes, she's pretentious and she's ignorant. But there's also a part of you that's like, oh, but she's not. He has to have this conversation with her. And so all of that material is treated in a way that makes you feel like, oh, yeah, we're fighting against ignorance and we're trying to have you understand what's happening from all of these different perspectives. And so while sure, you're not necessarily rooting for her to die, you understand why it happens.
Yeah.
In this cop thing, there is no complex. There's nothing complicated about it. They are the classic worst of the worst. Like, every stereotype you have about police officers, this is them. They are yeah. they are classic movie cops.
Evil police cops.
Evil police
yeah,
cops.
Yeah, cuz they're like that like, cuz yeah, they come in, they I assume they shoot Anthony because she's fine.
Yeah.
But, like, he also looks like he's already dead, so why did you feel the need to shoot him twice or whatever you did?
Yeah.
And then they lock her up, put her in the car, and you see them exchange words outside, and one of the cops gets into the vehicle with her and is like, hey, look, here's what's happening. Either, you know, they heroically saved you, or you get blamed for this, and you go, you're an accomplice, and you go to jail forever. What's it going to be? And you already see where this is going,
yeah,
a mile
yeah,
off.
Yeah, right.
And she's like, hey, can I see my reflection for a moment?
Like, well, you're all dead.
And honestly, I actually thought that was a little, that mean, aside from just the cops being ham-fisted, I thought, like, that was dumb too, because, like, you got a window right next to you.
Yeah, I thought that's what she was going to yeah. do. I thought she was just going to find a reflection somewhere.
Yeah, while he was talking, she was just going to look into the mirror and just say it.
Yeah, 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 right.
But I think that's right. So we talked about them playing sort of fast and loose with the how you summon...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
How you summon Candyman is because she looks up in the mirror and the cop can sort of see his reflection as well. And she says Candyman 4 times and he's confused by it. And he's like, Candyman, what's that? So he essentially said it the 5th time.
Yes.
So apparently now you can share Candymans.
Which doesn't make sense, because when the girls are doing it in the bathroom, there's one girl that says it by herself, right? And the girl is like, oh no, it's got to be all, we got to say it all together. So then they do say it 5 times together. And that's what's, it's not, they don't get to 4 and then she said the 5 and then
yeah.
Candyman. It's literally, they have to do all 4 or all 5. Yeah, it's. I didn't yeah. know you could share it. It's weird.
And apparently, he only kills. But see, that's what was weird about it. It's like, it wasn't like all the cops was in there.
Yeah.
It was like she said it 4 times. The one cop inside said it the 5th time, and then the cop inside the building comes out stabbed to death, and then the other ones get assaulted, and then he was the last one to go, and she lives, and that's where we get the transformation, all the bees, and then Tony Todd's face, and he's like, "Tell everyone." And that's where the movie ends.
Yes. That is literally the end of the film. And it's all... What? What? And it did. And then it was just like Candyman. And you're like, but there's more movie, right? And that's... Yeah. We're going to wrap this up, right?
And also, while Candyman comes out, before he turns into Tony Todd, and it's still Anthony, and he comes out, and the one cop is inside the cop car with her, he starts monologuing.
That's right.
And I don't remember exactly what he said, but I'm going to paraphrase here. And he said, I'm vengeance. I am the night. I am Candyman. That's basically what he said.
I don't think that's correct.
That was the message.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
And because this is clearly a superhero origin story, we're going to get this sequel, Batman v. Candyman, Dawn of Injustice.
I hate you so much. Now that's all I see. I just see Batman standing over Candyman. You're gonna kill Candyman.
It's gonna be.
Why'd you say that name?
It's gonna be some cop, some white cop at the precinct who's gonna take the body of the one that was murdered and turn him into a doomsday monster. And Batman and Candyman.
Candyman have to unite.
Yeah, they're gonna fight first.
And yeah. But then, guess who comes in? Helen Lyle. Comes in to save the day like Wonder Woman.
You got to save Helen. Why'd you say that name?
Okay. I want to be very clear. That is not what happens here. I don't think that's what's going to happen in the sequel.
I've got pictures of like all the, you know, all of his kryptonite devices are just going to be filled with pesticides to kill bees.
I have this ridiculous image of Tony Todd covered in bees standing next to a fully armored Batman standing next to a white dressed Helen.
She with you? I thought she was with you. Oh my goodness.
Wow. Okay.
Kind of want to see this.
Oh, dude, now, you know what? I'm in. I'm very intrigued. Wait.
Zack Snyder likes doing horror stuff, right?
Yeah, come on, Zack. This is all you.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry, I apologize, everyone. But for me, it felt like a very superhero origin story at the end. It didn't...
Yeah.
I didn't feel the same way at the end of this that I did around the original...
Yeah.
Film.
Right. Because that twist in the original, I feel like really pays off, right? Because, again, it's so much more... And I didn't realize this because I haven't watched the film in a very long time. So when I watched it recently, I was reminded of how much of a psychological thriller it actually is.
Yeah.
We always think of Candyman as being in the same vein as something like, you know, Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees. And, you know, because, yeah, as the sequels kind of go on, he becomes a bit more slasher. But that's not what's happening here. You're never quite sure if what's happening is in Helen's head or Candyman is absolutely real. And so, they, you know, again, they talk a lot about the power of myth and the power of urban legend and her sacrifice of, you know, actually fighting the real Candyman and then saving the baby changes the law. And now she becomes part of the urban legend. And that's a great payoff. I remember leaving that film and just feeling like, okay, that's a good way to end the film. Everything feels nice. And this one... I was pretty much on board until the laundromat, until that last laundromat scene, and then he kidnaps her, and then it all just, everything just unraveled for me.
It felt very rushed.
Yeah.
The whole third act.
Yeah, like you said, there's pieces missing somewhere. Everybody's motivation changes, and things just kind of get, it all just gets a bit out of hand, and I definitely think that there are other ways to get some of these things across.
Yeah, because, like, again, with the girlfriend that has the dead father and all this stuff, like, there should have been... Where's her arc? Where is her, like... Maybe she has to kill Anthony so that he don't become Candyman.
Yeah.
And she starts having the whole trauma of seeing her dad die and all this, and right. she gets some sort of catharsis out of it.
Yeah.
Catharsis. Sorry. Sorry.
Right.
Stumbling over my own words.
Yeah, it's fine.
But, like, we never get that.
Yeah, I kept thinking, like, oh, her dad is connected to the story in some way, and she didn't know, and that's why she doesn't want to go look at the art. And, like,
he was one of the Candyman.
He was one of the Candymans. That's right. That's not true. But it could have been some connect, like,
yeah.
it could have killed him. You know what I mean? And that gives her a purpose to be connected to the story as well. But yeah, it's
just sort of a lazy way to account for the fact that she likes to date damaged artists, yeah. I guess.
I promise you don't need a dead dad for that.
No. Nor a flashback.
Nor a flash. People do it every day. yeah, it felt very forced. And yeah, there's just so many elements of this that could have been done better and are just, they do feel a bit lazy, they feel a bit rushed. I get even with the cops, I think what you could have done is add an extra 5 or 10 minutes throughout the film and just show the cops generally being the worst to the residents of Cabrini Green and, you know, around, so that when they show back up, we're like, oh, yeah, these are the guys that do this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then you could have looked at it as, again, it's much more complex. It's telling the story of this particular cops that are assigned to this place, how they handle the ghetto, how they handle the projects, how they treat the people of the projects. So that when it all comes to a head, you're like, yeah, no, not only do you deserve it, but I understand why you're like that. And it we don't get any of that. It's all just, nope, these are movie cops. Kill them all.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah.
So, look, I know we've gone on and on about the problems of this film. But again, I think for the most part, we did enjoy it.
I did, yeah.
It just sort of felt like, and I know you said this about another film recently. I don't remember which one, but it just sort of felt like there was two films going on.
Yeah.
Or something, I don't know, something weird like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think part of the problem and part of the reason we've been talking about the problem so much is there is still a lot to like here. And yeah. So it's almost more frustrating than it is anything else, because it's like, oh, I liked a lot of this, but all of these things just, they could be changed and you could make a really, really great, tense, psychological horror film.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas this, it does, it just sort of, it feels like one of those origin films that's like banking on the prospect that they're going to get a sequel.
Yeah, right.
And you didn't need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be a contained story and then you can make a sequel.
Yeah. You know, I mean, look, yeah. We all know that the Candyman can, because he's got a hook instead of a hand and thinks that murder tastes good.
Yes. I think that's the lyrics to the song.
Yeah. That's right. For my upcoming Broadway musical,
The Candyman.
Farewell to the Flesh.
It's probably better than Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. So
actually, Candyman Turn Off the Dark was my initial name.
I like Farewell to the Flesh a lot better. Just bathe the whole front row in blood every show.
I mean, the working title of it, you know, originally when I was writing it, was just Nicolas Cage Covered in Bees.
Which makes about as much sense as it does here, so.
In fact, I like to imagine that in The Wicker Man, that was actually Nicolas Cage becoming Candyman.
Yeah, no, it all tracks. It all makes sense. Just connect it, and now we make the C-A-C-U...
I don't know.
CCU?
I don't know, but now I just want to see someone take an original cut of Candyman, the first one, and remove all Tony Todd scenes and put in just all the craziest cage face scenes you can find.
With bees.
With bees.
Just the Wicker Man.
Yeah, because that's when they tell the flashback of how he became Candyman. You just use that shot from Wicker Man of just saying, not the bees! Not the bees!
Yes, please.
So I've ruined Candyman for everyone.
More than once, actually.
Yeah. Can I say I've got a rare gift?
Oh, man. Wow. All right. So I was not expecting all of that. The point is, I'm Benjamin Baker.
I'm Caelan Burrows.
And we will see you after the next film.